You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Last week we started getting into the Sefer of Avodah Zarah with an introduction of exactly what the Issa of Avodah Zarah is. And then afterwards we had an analysis of the various modern-day religions that are very popular in the world, analyzing whether they are considered idolatrous religions or not idolatrous religions. And Baruch Hashem, we're able to basically complete the basic, at least, Hagdama to the Masechta of Avodah Zarah, which we plan to do last week. But it's interesting to note is that Chazal, because of the seriousness of Avodah Zarah, promulgated many Gzeres Rabbanan to serve as a harchalka between us and the non-Jewish world. And in many respects, one of the major purposes, for instance, in the beginning of the Masechta, we saw the concept of not doing business with them, Masav Mata, 3 days before their holidays, for the fear that we might, because at least at that time, the non-Jewish world was so involved in their idolatry, that for 3 days before their holiday, they were literally thinking and preparing and doing what had to be done. So any type of masa you did with them could somehow contribute to either the objects they bought for their idolatry, or might get them so excited that they got a good deal working with a Jewish
tank.
Businessman.
They'll
give a dar on their day. And I already pointed out last week that many of the Balei Tesis point out, based upon various Gemaras and Shas, which say that maybe that's the way they were into Avodah Zarah at the time of the Mishnah, and perhaps in the earlier Tekufos of the Amoraim, maybe the Gaonim. But by the time you hit the Rishonic era of the French and German Balei Tesis, they already saw what the Gemara says in various places, that are not so much into Avodah Zarah anymore. It's minig avasein b'yadayhem, and therefore they're doing it more of an outward manifestation to loyalty of the past, but because of real inner conviction intellectually and spiritually to the idolatries that were worshipped by their forefathers. And we showed him, say, for that reason, many Gedolim felt that the 3 day Hagdama of Iser, Masav Matan, should halach lamasa no longer apply to their generation, because 3 days before their holiday, they ain't thinking about their idolatry. Now, as I say, Dayot Lutzar Lashaita, it's bad enough they gotta celebrate the anniversary of the holiday, that they gotta waste their time 3 days before if it's only many of them. So many of the we call the Chiyuv de Rabbanan, the Harchakos, seem to be deleted over time in the Tekufas HaRishenim. And if that's the way it was in Tekufas HaRishenim, you can probably make a Kavachema the way it is today when it comes to people's attitude towards religion. As one person said, who was a candidate in our office, instead of religion quite obviously changing modern-day activities, modern activities should redefine how we redefine religion, bisman, as they do it in the opposite direction. But I'm not going to get into that. Now, what I want to deal with tonight is something that's quite interesting and fascinating. And that is, despite all the isurim Chazal had when it came to the Isar of Avodah Zarah, nevertheless, the Torah itself had other mitzvahs added in the Tayag mitzvah system to, on a biblical level, cause harchakos between ourselves and the Ovdei Avodah Zarah on a deraisa level, not on a derabbanan level, but on a deraisa level, to make sure that we do not assimilate and acculturate and could obviously not come to convert, perhaps, or to accept the mores and the hashkafa of the non-Jewish world. One of the examples of this is, before tonight's topic, is the Issa of Lo Sochanein, where the Gemara says that you should not even give them any chanoya bekarka, guy who's an oved avodah zarah, don't let them live next to you for the fear that you might assimilate and acculturate and be influenced by them. only a Ger Toshav, a non-Jew accepts officially Zaymis B'nei Noach, is allowed official residency rights in Eretz Israel, but a non-Jew has not accepted these Yisurim of Avodah Zarah Kedemer, and is not a pious, religious non-Jew who observes Zayin Mitzvahs on a Daraisa level, they're not supposed to be given any real rights. We had a whole Mishnah a couple of days ago, were they allowed to rent to them, were they allowed to pay, etc. So we see that Chazal, when it came to Los Achanim, don't give Nechanoia B'kaka. In fact, one of the reasons the Torah mentions continuously the eradication of all idolatry, the people of Harei, when it comes to the concept of killing the Canaanites who are of the Avodah Zarah, and destroying all the appurtenances that Klai will find in Eretz Israel when they enter, all of that is once again to try to get rid of anything that might cause Klai Israel to be influenced by the idolaters or their idolatrous objects, and could obviously leave. Rav Hirsch says, interesting enough, that the Tanakh that we have today, the Nevi'im especially, is a result of the fact that Klal Yisrael didn't really listen to Hashem's tzav, which means that he quotes a Maimer Chazal that all of you might have heard at some point in time, and that is, if Klal Yisrael would not have sinned the way they sinned during Bayis Rishon, the only Sifrei Tanakh we would have had were the Chamishei Chumshei Torah and Seif Yeshut, because that's the real estate book of how the land was divided. The only reason we have all the other Nevi'im and Ksuvim written later on is because instead of getting rid of all the pockets of idolatry that existed in Eretz Yisrael and getting rid of all the idolaters, that we decided once we captured most of the country to leave pockets here and pockets there, it ended up what Hashem was concerned about, and that is you being a mushba rather than a mashpia, and that's why Chazal say Bayis Rishon was destroyed because of Avodah Zarah. Gila writes for Shichas Damitz, a Gemara we learned in Masechtas Yoma. Primarily, the Isser that they violated was Avodah Zarah, but Avodah Zarah had as parts of it, some of it was Gila Rais and certain Avodah Zarahs, other types of Avodah Zarah involved killing people, child slaughter, or other types of human slaughter as part of their Avodah. So therefore, the Hirsch says that are none application of the Tzivuim HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Marachik, all types of idolatry from us. When we entered Eretz Israel, the fact we didn't listen caused later on that Hashem gave us Musa through the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim, and therefore that caused that literature to come into existence. But if we would have listened, then we wouldn't have been Mushpa. We only would have had Chamisha Chumshei Teira and Seif Yeshua Bavad. A Peledik statement, but that's what's mentioned by Chazal. Now, tonight, what we're going to be learning about is one of the harchakos of the Torah called the harchaka, the Issa Daraisa of Chukas Akum. If you look on the front page of the Maror Mekomos tonight, the Rambam already in Perek Yedaleh Hilchos Avodas Chum quotes all the psukim where this specific prohibition is mentioned. I'll just read a couple of lines to show what I mean by this. In Holchin B'chukas of the Chama, you shouldn't walk in the statues of the Gaisha world. Lamadaman Lehem, we shouldn't be similar to them. In the Malgish, the way we dress. Lel Basar, the way we cut a hair, Kiyotze Behem. Shenemel Aselch B'chukas Agayim. Fenebe B'chukasem Lo Salech, which is the most famous of all the Psukim. Nomer also says, Hishamuch HaPentiknoch HaShacharehem. Fakob B'yinechoru Mazir Sholi Yedama Lehem. The Klal Yisrael should not try to copy and mimic the non-Jewish world. Lo Yisrael, El Yisrael, and moved on them. Jews should be distinct and separate from them. V'yidu b'ma'abusha, the way he dresses, v'shamasav, and his other deeds. K'moshu moved on them, b'ma'adu, but they also say, well, hashkafically we are different from them. On a pragmatic level, we should be different from them as well when it comes to our clothing, our dress, our language, our behavioral patterns. We should act differently as B'nai Yisrael and not try to copycat the non-Jewish world. Okay, so we see over here that there's a concept of Havdalah that Hashem wanted us to practice in order to be marchach us from the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. This is called the Halacha of Chukas Akum, and what we're going to do tonight is see exactly what this involves, what comes under this categorization, and the rationale of the Torah for giving this halacha as one of the Tayyag mitzvahs and the meaning and significance of this Bizman Hazeh. Now, in the Makaras, what I want you to do is I want you to look immediately to page, where it says page number 17 in the Makaras. This is part of the bigger Choveret that was not Nogea tonight, Rabbi. I mean, that's why I didn't change the number of the pages, but the fact is, it's part of a much bigger piece of work. And in that Choveret, page 17, happens to be Daf Yud Aleph and Masechtas Avodah Zarah, where I want to start tonight and show you something quite interesting when it comes to Chazal's concerns of the concept of Chuchsei Los Aleichu and how it relates to many of the sugyas contained in Shas and Avodah Zarah and in other places where our interaction between ourselves and the non-Jewish world are mentioned in different types of manifestations. Now, one of the inyana mentioned in one of the earliest Mishnayos in Masechtas Avodah Zarah were the various religious holidays observed by the non-Jewish world at the time of the Mishnah. Some of them were observed by the Roman Empire. A good amount of them that I mentioned in the Mishnah, the Rambam says in his Perush Mishnayos, were introduced later on in the Roman Empire by the Christian world. I mean, there's a Mishnah where many Rishonim interpret this as pure Roman holidays. The Rambam says, no, these are holidays that were established by the Notzrim, who became the official religion of the Roman Empire at a certain point in time when one of their basic emperors converted to Christianity. But Benkach u Benkach, the three-day halacha, at that time when people were very dedicated to the religion, was mentioned about those tekufos and those people, whether it's the Roman Empire, idolatry, or Catholicism, which the Rambam looked upon as being another form of idolatry, as last week's shir, the three-day harchaka was in place. The Mishnah then mentions that there are additional days of the year that were made into religious holidays later on, and one of them, mentioned by the Gemara, if you look now, where it says, on this page 17, you see Aleph, and it says Avodah Zarah right above that. You notice in the Dibra Maskil it says Yom HaLeda V'Yom HaNisa, the day that the idolatrous kings or emperors were born, and the days of their death, the Yahrzeit, were also made into idolatrous holidays during this period of time. Rashi points out the day of the birth of the emperor, as long as the emperor is alive, he's going to make sure you celebrate his birthday. But when it comes to Yom HaMisa, who's going to guarantee you're going to celebrate his Yahrzeit? So Rashi says on this side, that means as long as his child took over the kingdom after he died, his son at least made sure that the father's Yahrzeit was observed as a holy day. They made it into a pagan holiday. And the three-day halacha that applied to their normal idolatrous holidays applied to the birthday and the yahrzeit of the emperor during their lifetime and in the post-period during the children's lifetime as they observed their father's yahrzeit. Now, in the Mishnah there's a machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim when they're observing the yahrzeit of the emperor that passed away, the king that passed away, how dedicated were they to this emperor, this king, for you to know that they really looked upon this as a real religious holiday and they really worshipped their pagan deities, to establish it on such a level there should be 3 days of Iser, of Masav Matan beforehand because of that religious observance, are the barometers to know how dedicated they are. And the Mishnah itself quotes machlokes between Rav Meir and Chachamim, one way of determining whether in fact the Yahrzeit really meant something to the people as a real religion, fervent Kodesh holiday, is based upon a simple parameter. That according to Shitas Chachamim, when that king died, did they burn his belongings? Were they seref his nechasim upon his death? To demonstrate how choshev this king was, or this emperor was in their eyes, that nobody else can use their implements or their equipment afterwards, if that's the level of dedication and cover they had for that melech, then most probably when they made the Yahrzeit celebration, they made it into a full-fledged pagan holiday with all the pitchkeviz, and therefore all the Surah Chazal would apply that as a full-fledged pagan holiday. So it seems that according to Shitas Chachamim, the determination of the Yahrzeit's chashivas was were they serf nechasim at the time of the king's death. Rav Meir said no. Rav Meir says we don't need that. As far as he's concerned, Rav Meir says, if they are officially observing the Yahrzeit of the king or the emperor, that is a demonstration that they could obviously have tremendous chashivas for him. If they're worshipping idols, we can assume they're doing it with the full fervor that's necessary. It has a din of a pagan holiday, and all the halachas, the pagan holidays, applies to them. So the Gemara, which I wanted to go inside with you now, to learn Be'iyum, this Gemara, Gemara Sanhedrin, come up with two different maskanas, we'll see very shortly, in analyzing whether something's called a chukas ha'akamanat. Let me just show you what I mean by this. The Gemara tells us, Mechlad Rameya Savar, Lo Shana Misa Sheyesh Basreifa, Lo Shana Misa Sheyem Basreifa, that I don't care whether or not when the king or the emperor died, whether they burnt his belongings or not, so a subsequent king or emperor couldn't use them, to me that's irrelevant. As far as I'm concerned, the crucial factor is, what's the crucial factor? The factor is that if they officially will makabel this as a Yahrzeit celebration every year, that's an indicator the king or emperor was chashuv to them, and it is a pagan holiday, and therefore any sreifa that was done in conjunction with their death has nothing to do in the determination of the chashivas of the Yahrzeit henceforth. So they say, according to Rameya, therefore, lo shana misa she'ein bo sreifa, or misa she'es bo sreifa, the observance of the Yahrzeit, pachle, but it's a chavim, it's a given they're worshipping their idolatry to give covet that they had such a leader that passed away, and by definition is considered a Yom Shel Avodah Zarah, a celebration as such. Now, if you say the sreifa doesn't mean anything in defining as a Yom Avodah Zarah, what does that show you? That sreifa, burning the nechasim, has nothing to do with idolatry, because according to Shitas Rav Meir, it's irrelevant whether they burnt his nechasim. By definition, the Yahrzeit of an emperor and king is a Yom Avodah Zarah. Alma sreifa lav chukehi. Therefore, he said, if there was a minhag amongst the goyim at that time, according to Shitas Rav Meir, to burn the belongings of the non-Jewish emperor king that died, it had nothing to do with Avodah Zarah. It was not called chukas ha'akum, it's not a chuk. It has to do with maybe kavod that you're giving to the king. But it doesn't come under chukas ha'akum, and therefore, halach lamasa, it is a permissible activity, and has nothing to do with idolatry. B'tairis ikar aveda v'achukas ha'akum is halachly irrelevant to the definition of this. Now, by the fact that Rameya said this, who is he being chalak upon? Mechlal de Rabbanan, where the Rabbanan say no. They say only a misa where the king had sreifa done for his nechasim is considered a day of idolatrous observance henceforth. And any king whose possession was not burnt is looked upon a king that was not so chashuv in the eyes of his followers. And therefore they really didn't make this into a real day of Avodah Zarah and the future celebration of it. If the rabbis themselves hold that sreifa is a crucial fact in defining the idolatrous nature of the day of the Yahrzeit, Michla Rabban Savri sreifa chuki. It must have been in their mind a chok in the Gaisha world that when a king died, as part of the Akum's celebration of his petira and giving them kavod, chukas Akum was the chok of the Akum was, even if it's not idolatry, but it's chukas ha'akum, and that is to burn the actual possessions of the king. Therefore, in the Rabbanim's mind, whether the Yahrzeit celebration is considered a chukas ha'akum, and whether that therefore makes it under the rubric of the Isa v'Zon ha'chach b'Zara, depends upon whether there was surface nechasim. Therefore, sreifa chukihi. And therefore, the Gemara initially wants to make this into a machlekes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, whether sreifa of their possessions is a chukas akum or not chukas akum, and this will therefore be a major machlokas tanayim articulated in the Mishnah. So the Gemara said there's one problem. The problem is we have a Mishnayasin and we have Brisos. Not only here in Avodah Zarah, but we had this early in the Masech, the Sanhedrin, that talked about Kavod HaMalachim, and there there's a Beferish of Brisa on Nun Beis HaMabeis that says, Sarfet al HaMalachim, the evil when Jewish kings die during Bais Rishon, they used to burn all of their belongings that were inanimate at the time of their death, that were used by them during their lifetime. And it says, V'lo midach emori, which means this has nothing to do with the Amorite idolatrous practices. And therefore, if that's the case, it's halachically permissible for Jewish kings to have this done within the chasm upon their death. So says the Gemara, if you're telling me this is a machlekes tonight where the sreifas and the chasm is chukas ha'akum, ichukhi anan heches arfinim. How in the world can any braisa say, according to Shitas Chachamim, the way they're interpreting our Mishnah, that Sreifas Nechasim is an indicator of Chukas Akum and a celebration of an idolatrous type of behavior, if you say it's a Chuki, according to Shitas Chachamim, how can the Mishnah or a Braisa say that it's allowed to do this for a Jewish king upon his death? The Torah says, U'b'chukasayim lo se'leichu. So quite obviously, if this is, and in fact it is paskin by the Rambam and by other Rishonim, that theoretically speaking you should be Sarif al HaMalachim their Nechasim, and Bayis Rishon they did it. In Bayis Sheni there were no Malachim anymore technically, because at that time, most of the time, the Kohenim had taken away the Malucha, which is a big debate whether they were allowed to or not. So who were the people who they burnt Nechasim in Bayis Sheni? The Nesiyim of the Sanhedrin HaGadol, they had Sreifa done on their Nechasim upon their death. We're going to see this very short in the Gemara later on. So if that's the case, the Gemara says, if it says, B'chusem lo se'leichu, and if you want to say, Chum hold it, that Sreifas Nechasim is a dinner of Chukas HaAkum, how in the world can this be done for Jewish kings and Bayis Rishon, and the Siyah Sanhedrin and Bayis Sheni? Ella, what must you say? You have to reinterpret a mission in such a way that at the end of the day, not only Rameah holds burning the chasim is not considered chukas akum, but even the chachamim were cholk upon him in the Mishnah cannot hold its chukas akum. In order to say, therefore, doing it for a Jewish king or a Jewish nasi is permissible. Therefore, kul alma sreifal af chukihi. Ella, so why in the world do you burn their nechasim? So the Gemara says it's a sign of chashivus to show the kavod, the respect, the honor they had for their king and emperor, not only during their lifetime, but even after they pass away. It's a sign of respect. And therefore, if that's the case, the debate between Rav Meir and the Chachamim about the presence or lack thereof of Sreifas HaNechasim of the Melech has to be interpreted in such a way that everybody will hold at the end, it doesn't involve Chukas Akum. So how do you do that? So listen to what the Gemara does. Ella, the Gemara says, as far as we're concerned, burning the Chasim according to everybody is a sign of Chashivus. For Hacha B'Hacha Mithlagi. And the Machlokas Ramein Lachamim in the Mishnah Masechtas Avodah Zarah is going to be explained in the following way. Rav Meir Savar, Lo Shana Misa Sheyesh Ba Sreifa, Lo Shana Misa She'ein Ba Sreifa, Palchi Lavadis Lechavim. Rav Meir is being interpreted now the way he was interpreted before. The fact they are officially being Kaveya, a yurt site for a deceased king and an emperor, which they're going to observe each and every year on the yurt site. The fact they were Kaveya, that alone shows you the respect and covet they had for that king. And since the king himself either was worshipped as an idolatry or was the representative of the idolatry in heaven, whoever he's representing, whichever way you look upon it, that activity of celebrating the Yahrzeit site made it into an idolatrous holiday. And therefore that's what, according to Rav Meir, is the crucial factor. The burning of the Nechasim is irrelevant by him in defining their chashivas for the king. What's the Shitas Chachamim? Rabbanim Savri, Misa Sheyesh Bo Sreifa Chashivahu Upalchi, She'ein Bo Sreifa Lo Chashiva V'lo Palchi. The Chacham is held, no. The fact that a son who inherited the empire from his father, the emperor and king, and took over and made as part of the new halachas of the empire the celebration of the Yahrzeit, that doesn't mean that he made it into Avodah Zarah, nor did the people treat this as a day of Avodah Zarah. Most probably, could very well be, if he asked the people, they would prefer that one less day of idolatrous Avodah Zarah, because it cost the money. You know, they had to bring karbanos and other stuff. So how do you know how chashuv it was for them? So says Shitas Chachamim, if the people, upon seeing the passing of the previous king and emperor, showed kavanah not just only by being willing to accept a Yahrzeit celebration every year, but they literally took nechasim that was worth a lot of money, and instead of giving it to the next emperor and king, they basically destroyed it so nobody else can use it. That chashivus, that love, that dedication showed how much they were mechabed the king, and therefore it's assumed if they were mechabed the king on that level, they must have made that day into 100% an idolatrous holiday with all its ramifications. So the chukas ha'akum had nothing to do with the actual sreif. The sreif was only an indicator how much the people were dedicated and loved and respected the emperor, and how much therefore is there an impetus to make the day of celebration of the Yahrzeit into an idolatrous holiday. So they said if they were burnt to nechasim, it indicates a special chashivus for therefore their king, and therefore it's a bad day of Avodah Zarah. According to the Rabbanim, if they only celebrate the Yahrzeit and they did not burn nechasim upon their death, they're doing it because the son's now emperor, they don't want to start up with him, but the king didn't mean that much to them who passed away, the emperor, and therefore the day is not looked upon as a day of full-fledged Avodah Zarah to the point he got Aser, Malacha, and Masamatan 3 days before. But at the end of the day, everybody held that burning Nechasim as a concept is a din of Kavod HaMalchus and Chashivus. It has nothing to do with Chukas Akum. So the Gemara, quite obviously, at the end of the day, on this page, wants to show you that Sreifas HaMalachim at the Maskanas HaSugya going to Shitas Chachamim and Shitas Rameya had nothing to do with Chukas Akum. It was an indicator how important the person was in the eyes of his past Malucha, but that was not an idolatrous practice, and that's why Jewish kings, when they died, when they were served their Nechasim, Halach Lamasa, there was no Shelo Chukas Akum. The Gemara points out a little further, to go further into the Sugya. The Gemara says over here that Gufa, Safan Malach, Aimbashum Darche Mori. So they bring out that there is a very classical historical note to prove the thesis, according to the Maskanas HaSugya, that Sreifa LaMalachim is not considered idolatrous or Chukas Akum, is the Haftacha that Yirmiyah HaNavi gave to the last Jewish king in Bayis Rishon before it was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, and that is Melech
Tzidkiyahu.
Melech Tzidkiyahu was, you know, basically speaking, saw the Malucha and the kingdom about to be captured and destroyed by the Babylonian armies through Nebuchadnezzar. So what happened, ultimately speaking, was his Yirmiyah, believe it or not, in that Tekufa, was being threatened with his life by the anti-Yirmiyah forces. They threw this man in a pit. What finally saved Yirmiyah is the fact that Tzidkiyahu made sure to get him out of that pit as quickly as possible, that he himself should not be killed by his enemies, because they looked upon Yirmiyah as the cause of the destruction of Bayis Rishon, because he always talked negatively, it's going to be destroyed, and all the Nevi'ah Sheka prophesies it's going to survive. So they blamed Yirmiyah at the end for all the trouble. Yirmiyah said to Tzidkiyah, you risked your life as the king to go against a lot of people in your Malucha to save my life, so I want to know that Hashem is going to pay you a respectful covet to recompense you. And what is that?
that even though Yerushalayim is going to be captured by Nebuchadnezzar and the Beis Hamikdash is going to be destroyed, you are not going to be killed by Nebuchadnezzar, which logically would have been done by the capturing army. You'll be left alive. That doesn't mean they're not going to torture you. That doesn't mean they're not going to hurt you. Because what happened with Zedekiah and Abednego at the end is they finally killed his children in front of him. And then Nebuchadnezzar blinded him, if you remember the story. But the fact is that despite all of that, Zedekiah was allowed to stay alive, and they fed him, they took care of him, despite the fact that they did that. He ended up living longer than Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar predeceased him. And Yirmiyah said to Zedekiah, I want you to know that when you die, the covet that was done for Malachim when the Maluch was still flourishing in Bayis Rishon, you're going to have the honors of Sreifas and Nechasim done for your Nechasim. So it says over here, Vishalom Tamuz, Uba Mitzvah Savasecha Malachim was done for your forefathers, and their Maluch will be done for you. So we therefore see that this concept of Sreifas HaMalachim was part of Yirmiyah's, one of his last nevuos that he gave to Zedekiah. Now, if this had anything to do with Chukas HaAkum on any level, then quite obviously this would not have been a prophecy of Yirmiyah, and it would not have been done. And then the Gemara points out what I mentioned before, Geshem Shasarfin al HaMalachim, Kach Sarfin al HaNesiyim, and Bayisheni, and what do you Saref? Al HaMalachim, Mitasim, their beds, Klei Tashmishim, the utensils they use, that when he died, Saraf Rav Unkelus, who was one of his Talmidim, Ager, Shivimanatsuri, 70 monies of special, very, very expensive coins. So the Gemara asks parenthetically, V'amarta, Mahin Sarafina, Alain Mitasam, Kleitish Mashan, you said they burn his inanimate objects. You didn't say they burn money. And the way the Gemara is translating it, when this Gadol died in Bayis Sheni, his Talmud Mamish took money and he burnt money. So what are you talking about? Ela Ema B'Shiva Manatsuri, etc., which means to say, they didn't burn money, but they were willing to burn objects worth so much money, Alts Kavod HaMalchus. That's what's being emphasized, what Unkelus HaGer did, Alts Kavod that Rav Gamliel. So in any event, Rabbi, so we therefore see that Sreif Allah HaMalachim in this Gemara is classified as neither Dachei Mari, Sachukas Akum, and therefore Halach Lamasa, it is practiced. And that's the maskan of the sugya over here. What is interesting to note is that there's another Gemara, Imesechta Sanhedrin, if you turn out to page 18, where the Gemara brings in there a little bit of the Gemara of Avodah Zarah in a different context, but you'll see that the Gemara in Sanhedrin ends up a little differently than the Gemara in Masechtis and Masechtis Avodah Zarah. The Shela in the Gemara in Sanhedrin is the mitzvah of hereg, of decapitation, when a person commits certain crimes. If you're a murderer, the way the Beis Din punished you is by decapitating you, besides other averos that are chayav hereg. So the Gemara says, if you look in the Mishnah, where it says right above Beis Sanhedrin, Mitzvah in Haragin, Matiz and Rosha B'Saif, you decapitate a person from the front of their throat, the way the Malchus and the Romans used to kill people that way at the time of the Roman Empire. Rabbi Yehuda says it's a nivel to do this, it's disgusting. I have a better idea, and that is put a person's head on a sadan, on a wooden base, and then you take up a kofitz, which is basically an axe, kaitz b'kofitz, and you chop off there that way. So the Chacham said to Rabbi Yehuda, "Amulo, ein misa manuvelas mizu." I mean, by a sharp knife, it's a sharp cut, and you know you can get the head off pretty quickly and efficiently. Once you start using an axe to cut off Rabbi Sai, it's messy, it's bloody, it's dirtier. So if you're worried about nivel ames over here, nivel ames is more using an axe than using a sword. Now, what's interesting is the Gemara's discussion afterwards. The Gemara says over here, Tanya, I know chopping off with an axe is a misa manuvelas. Avamani Esa, the Torah says, B'chukhusayim lo salechu, and since the Roman Empire used to kill by decapitation with a sword, if that's what they did, we can't kill by killing with a sword. So chopping off the head on a block of wood with an axe is a way of avoiding violating chukim. So the Rabbanim answer, listen to the Rabbanim's answer. The Rabbanim said, Chavin deksiv, saif bederaisa. Isn't there a halach when it comes to Ir HaNidachas that you don't kill the people in the city there with skila like people usually over the Zer Chayiv, but you kill them in Lefi Cheref? The Torah says you kill them by decapitating them. So since using a sword to decapitate and to kill is mentioned in the Torah, love and I could, we don't derive it from them. And if that's the case, even though they do it, but since we don't derive it from them, where do we derive it from? From our Torah, that takes away the problem of Chukas Akum. Now this sugi seems to imply that even if it would be a Chukas Akum, the fact we don't derive it from them, but we derive from our Torah, takes away the Iser. Takes away the Iser. Mm. Now, the reason I'm doing this is because you see what's going to happen when it comes to discussing Sofran Amalachim. So they're going to Elo Temahachi, because if you don't say this, Hod Esanya Sofran Amalachim, V'lamadache Mori, Heichi Safin, and how can we do Sreif Amalachim, Chaksil Chaser Lo Seleichu, Ela, what would he say? Came in the Ksiv Sreif of the Reis, the Ksiv, as a Sibai Tzidkiya, the Mesreifas Avasecha, and therefore, if that's the case, if we therefore have the following dilemma, they're doing something a certain way, and if we follow that way, it's chukas akum, even if it's not idolatry, even things that are not idolatrous, that's chukas akum, will be medamalehem. But if the source of us doing what they're doing is not following them, but it's based upon gzeres akasovs, the gzeres akasov is mafkia from chukas akum. That's what this Gemara seems to be saying. Which means, Safran HaMalachim could be Chukas HaAkum, but since we're deriving it from the Torah, not deriving it from them, that takes away the Isa Deraisa that applies to it. Now why am I mentioning this to you? Because our Gemara and Avodah Zarah already basically came to the conclusion that Safran HaMalachim has nothing to do with Chukas HaAkum, and it's only Al Tzkarim Chashivus, and our Gemara and Avodah seems to imply that if it was a Chukas HaAkum, the fact we have psukim showing that we're doing it will not be sufficient to make it permissible. So you have two sugyas here in Shas, which the Rishonim point out seem to contradict each other. The Gemara in Masechta the Sanhedrin seems to say that even if we're medama to them and we do something that they do, and therefore should be categorized as chukas akum, if we can show the reason we're doing it is because, as I state in the Torah, our own sources, we ignore the chukas akum dimension and we permit the activity. The Gemara in the Masechta Avodah Zarah says, no. We have to first prove the activity that we seem to be doing like them has nothing to do with Chukas Akum whatsoever, has nothing to do with idolatry trying to imitate them, and the concept of why they do what they do has a logic behind it. And what's the logic? By Sreifas Amalachim, it's Chashivas and Kavod HaMalchus. So if that's the case, once I can show you what they're doing, halacha lamaasa has nothing to do with chukas akim, it's a concept of kavod hamalchus, which is a universal principle, I can therefore, quite obviously, do it as well. I don't need the gzeres akasov to be matami, I just have to make sure it's not chukas akim. So you have two sugyas that are chalk upon each other, and I will tell you right now, there's a major machlokas rishonim, which sugya you basically paskin like. In other words, do you say something as a chukas akum is undermined by the fact as a state in Torah? Or do you have to prove what you're doing is not chukas akum to allow it to be done? I don't have to prove it's mentioned in the Torah. I just have to make sure that what I'm doing is not an official chukas akum. And it's a machlokes between all the rishonim exactly how I darshan the sugya. Now, when I'm telling you this, I want to get now into the halach lamasa, chukas akim, when it comes to halach lamasa tonight. The gadol who really defines chukas akim the way the Shulchan Aruch ultimately paskins over here, and in the Maran Kamos, on page 19, you have the halachos mentioned in Simon Kuf Ayin Tes in Yeridea, the least halach of the paskin. The gadol he served as the one who was mazber these halachos, which the Shulchan Aruch accepted ultimately in the bigger picture, is on page 23 of Makaras, the Maharik. Rav Yosef Kolin, who lived in the Tukufas HaMavir between the Rishonim and the Achronim, this Maharik, who in fact is quoted by Rav Yosef Karo, so he was really towards the end of the Tukufas HaRishonim, if Rav Yosef Karo quotes him in Shulchan Aruch in his halachos, so he, as being the earliest of the Achronim of Beis Yosef and the Ramah, in that Tukufa, according to Maharik, is basically one of the last of the Rishonic early Achronic levels. So Rav Yosef Kolin has a whole tshuva of how do we define Chukas Akh. And what he comes up with is the following categories, and you'll see how we pass in the sugya of the machlokas between the sugya in Avodah Zarah and the sugya in Sanhedrin. Number one, says the Maharik, whatever is done for idolatrous purposes, that is surely a violation of Chukas Akum, nothing to talk about. So the first thing you got to do is to try to make sure that whatever is being done has nothing to do with Chukas Akum. Now, which Gemara supports that thesis? It's not the Gemara in Sanhedrin, but it's the Gemara in Masechtas Avodah Zarah, because the Gemara had to bend over backwards to show that everybody held Sofen HaMalacha was a cousin of Chavid v'Chashivus, had nothing to do with Chukas Akum. So he basically is accepting Halacha Lamasa, the presentation of the Gemara in Avodah Zarah against the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that anything that is done for idolatrous purposes is also Chukas Akum. That's number one.
There are many avodas that we do in the base of Mikdash, which the Goyim also do, but they're right now. I mean, you know, just sacrificing for bonos, I don't know.
The fact that they copycatted us later on is irrelevant. They can't be mafkia a mitzvah and a terah because they want to copycat us. So the fact they shech to their idols and the fact that they bow down to kedemer, those are mitzvahs deraisas. You can't be mafkia tayag mitzvah because of it. We're not talking about mitzvahs deraisas that they're copycatting.
These from the VM that we're talking about.
Yeah. We're talking about minhagim and things that developed over time, als kovet, minhagim and kedemer, etc., etc.
They got it from us. It's not a mitzvah though.
What?
If they got it from us, if we did it first, that's not about the Zohar. Yeah,
but the problem, yeah, is that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah shows you that even though we were Sarf al Hamalachim, Chazal bent over backwards in that Gemara to show you at the end of the day that no matter who you hold, like Rav Meir the Chachamim, the reason they're doing it is not because of idolatrous reasons, but it's the universal concept of Kavod HaMalchus Chashivus. And only because of that reason are we allowed to continue doing it to this very day. There's no mitzvah mentioned in Torah, Sreif Olam Malachim. No pasuk mentioned there, you have to be Sreif Olam Malachim. On a mitzvah, say the Tayyak mitzvahs in the Chumash. It just was a promise made to Tzidkiyah. And we know people did it. But at the end of the day, they can't take a mitzvah we do and make it into something that's usher. You hear what I'm saying? So therefore, what I'm pointing out to you is whatever is an official chok l'avodah zarah, which means it's not a mitzvah in the Torah, but it's a chok l'avodah zarah, there's nothing to talk about. If they take one of our mitzvahs and use it for avodah zarah, well, they can do whatever they want, but that's not going to aser our mitzvah, which is a mitzvah, which is an actual mitzvah, aser v'lois aser. Number two, says the Maharik, whatever is an act that is involved with lust and pritzus, when it comes to sexual misbehavior, comes also under the isa chukas akum, and that relates to the way you conduct yourself, that relates to how you dress with clothing, colors that are representative of things that are inappropriate behavior. There used to be certain colors identified with certain sexual perversities. Believe it or not, what is the color of homosexuals today? Anybody know? What?
It's a rainbow, really.
No.
It's a rainbow.
No. Well, what's the color of homosexuals? No, not going to grace a bucky. The Empire State Building, when the holiday takes place, has colors on top representing that holiday. The colors they put up on the Empire State Building when they have the LBG, whatever is, parades, you know what colors they put up? A purplish color. Purple was indicative of homosexuality, at least today. That's their color. We're not talking about rainbow coalitions now. We're talking about now, that's their color. What I found, going in the Makaros, that that's not a new 21st century phenomenon. But going back to the homosexuality of thousands of years ago, that was also the color worn by homosexuals at that time to represent their belief in homosexuality. You know, it's like, Ein Chodesh Tachas Hashem. So if that's the case, Rabbi Isai, what I'm pointing out to you is that if you have a specific color that represents a certain ideology, and people of that ideology, Bedafka, wear that color to represent what they are, so that comes under also concept there, Chukka, Pritzus, and Kedaymer. Wearing clothing that is not Tznius comes under this as well. That's also brought down in the Shulchan Aruch, quoting the Maharik. The third category is to do something the Goyim do that have no Sechel HaYasha whatsoever. We're basically mimicking them and copying them, but there's no logic in what they're doing. It's a Dover Shel Shtus Bli Tam Gomer. For you to ape what a guy does without a logic behind what you're doing, while you're mimicking them, according to the Marik, also comes under Chukas HaAkel. And in his tshuva on page 23, he was asked a simple question, which since we have a doctor here tonight, he'll appreciate it. In the time of the Marik, doctors in the Goyish world wanted to publicize to the people in society their doctors. If you need a doctor, I'm here and you should hire me for your services. But how did they have it? They didn't have any television, they didn't have any internet. So how did they PR their doctors? So they wore, doctors wore a special type of robe that basically looked like a gigantic talus cotton that basically went all the way down to their feet and front and back, etc., certain color. Whoever was a doctor, medical doctor, wore that. So if you're walking in the street and also you need a doctor, only doctors wore this type of robe. It was a PR, you get customers. So the Jewish doctors asked the Maharik, if the Goyish doctors are PRing themselves when it comes to publicity wearing this type of robe, am I allowed to do such? Which means, is this a problem? Chukas HaAkel, just aping and mimicking them, is come under category number three. So says the Maharik, you're not copying them because that you want to just wear a color a cloak that they're wearing. You want to compete on a professional business level that you should get the customers the way they get customers. And if the way they're getting customers is wearing this type of robe, and you want to wear that robe to get, you also offer your service as a doctor. On the contrary, everybody loves Jewish doctors. Therefore, if that's the case, there is a logic in what you're doing, you're not just mimicking them. So the third category of Amarik, of Chukas HaAkel, just aping and mimicking them, being as Dabalahem, doesn't apply when there's a logic in what you're doing. In this case, a financial and commercial logic what you're doing. So at the end of the day, Rabbi Isai, when it comes to Chukas HaAkel, it limits certain things we're allowed to do, but not in an insane fashion, which means if what you're doing is not considered something that's a chok l'avodah zarah, if what you're doing is not a violation of pritzus or immorality that the non-Jewish world represents by doing this activity or wearing this type of clothing, if what you're doing is not just mimicking them, but there is a financial or other common sense logic in wearing certain clothing and doing certain things for commercial or monetary purposes, then that halacha l'maaseh becomes permissible for you. And the isa of being mizdamah and chukas akum is limited and it does not apply to you. Why am I saying it's important we have the Marik? Because if I only had the Rambam text we started off tonight's share with as the barometer for the halacha, and you read this Rambam carefully, where he says we should not therefore do anything that shows we try to mimic and we shouldn't be similar, lo yadamalahem, we shouldn't do things that show similarity in our clothing, in our way we cut our hair, etc., and the places that we daven, the shul should not be made like Kaisha cathedrals or churches or idolatrous temples. If we take the Rambam literally, it would make our life untenable. The fact of the matter is, most of us dress today with clothing that's very similar to the Goyish world. And Rabbi Moshe was asked the question many, many years ago, fact, in Europe, certain places had hakpadas that Jews who dressed differently than goyim, even the way they used to. Some do it today.
They bought them on the other side.
Whatever it is. So says Rav Moshe, that might have been a minig in certain communities in Europe, where for whatever reason, they felt they had to, outsnius other reasons, dress differently, etc., etc. But in America, he says, the fact of the matter is, that's not the minig in America. In fact, most of the clothing manufacturers, he says initially, were Jewish. Most of the people into the shmata business, going back from Europe, were Yitlach. My Zeta was in the shmata business. He came as a Ger Chassid here, but, you know, that's what the Jews did. So they're not making these begadim because of idolatrous reasons, or for you know, theological reasons, or Kukas Akim reasons. Or Moshe looked upon the begadim in America as something that's has no religious significance whatsoever. And he told Chassidus Yidden or Litvish Yidden that if you want to come here and change your beged from a long beged and a heimish beged, you want to wear a regular business suit, you have my bracha to do it. The only thing Rav Moshe said is true, you have to be careful about, is big day pritzos. And he said, especially about women, when it comes to women's dress, where, you know, quite obviously, slowly but surely was a decline. In America, now you can see it, quite obviously, Rabbi Yisrael, in the new styles out there that are determined by the Heiliger people in France. They determine each year what the new fashions are going to be. So the fact of the matter is, in Snius, Rav Moshe says, that's big and pritzos, that we can't be mocked out. Okay, who has it? Where it's done. But if it's a question of wearing a long beged or a short beged, a regular business suit, or a chassidish beged, and there's nothing wrong with the sneeze of the beged, in America, you don't have those harchakos, and he therefore allowed people even to change when it comes to that. What I'm pointing out to you is therefore is, as even though there are harchakos the Chazal made called chukas akum, they made it within a reasonable type of level, and did not make it an intolerable phenomenon, which means we have to be machik ourselves, but not make it something of a davishin tibiyacholamid by. Which means even though it's a deraisa, Chazal were allowed when it comes to chukas akum. It's interesting. They say that Chazal were allowed by chukas akum to define as the bezin hagadol what's considered part of the isur and not part of the isur, where many of the deraises were not just given to us by Hashem, but they were defined by HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. There are some halachos in the Torah that the basic Isur or halachos were given to us, but the definition was left up to Chazal. One of them is Chukas Akum. Another example, according to the Ran, is Isur Malach and Chalamayit, where the Gemara says, Marsul Chamalach Chachamim, they should be kovei what Malach is Mutan Chalamayit on the Raisa level, and which Malachas are prohibited. Beferish Gemara in Masechtas Chagiga. When it comes to what Inuya Ma'asa Deraisa on Yom Kippurim, so Achila V'Shtiyah could obviously that you know, but all the other Inuyim, if you claim they're Deraisa, Ferran says Ma'asa Kaz Chamalach for them to define what's considered Inuy that you're required to do on Yom Kippur. It's not. They define the parameters on when it comes to wearing leather shoes, when it comes to Tashm Shemita, Gadaymer, Chitza, which I mentioned in the Torah, they were allowed to define the Deraisa parameters. Chukas Akum happens to be one of these exceptions to the rule, they were able to find the prime. That's why, when you have a governmental official, say in the time of the Roman Empire, that to be part of their Senate, you had to cut your hair a certain way. You had to dress in a certain type of robes. Otherwise, you would not be accepted as a senator in their Senate and be able to do what you had to do. So even though those robes and that haircut had a chukas akum technical prohibition, and for a person who's not a courtier, it'd be also for them to cut their hair that way or dress in those robes. People who are kreivei hamalchus, who were sent by the Jewish community to represent them in the Roman court to represent the Jews, were given a biblical dispensation to not have to adhere to chukas akum. They can cut their hair the way the other Romans did.
Which category would that fall into, the three of the Marek's category?
That category itself would basically speaking fall into the category of idolatrous, because the haircuts themselves were part of an idolatrous sect type of haircut. When it came to the robes basically indicated a certain hashkafic, I would say, behavior when it comes to idolatry and beliefs as well. So therefore, these are chukas akum types of clothing and haircuts. But a karav l'malchus, since it was needed to be a karav l'malchus, or chazal, the Beis Yosef said, were given the right to say they have a heter which nobody else has. They're defining the deraisa. They were given the right to define when the deraisa applies and doesn't apply.
The law.
And that's why halach lamasa, when it comes, for instance, even when it comes to work on chalamayit, there's certain malachas they permitted, certain malachas they prohibited. They didn't just ask all malacha. You know, they define what's a tzarech hamoed I'm allowed to do, and what's not a tzarech hamoed I'm not allowed to do. So they were allowed to define parameters when it came to all sinuyim of Yom Kippur. I mean, eating and drinking might be obvious, but all the other isurim that we have, they determined when a person can wash their face. A kala to be beautiful in a chassan's eyes is allowed to wash her face a little bit on Yom Kippur, that she shouldn't look ugly in the first couple of days to a chassan. I mean, there were kulas built in certain levels which they were allowed to define and give parameters to. And chukas akram happens to be one of them, but at the end of the day, Rabbi Isai, this specific chukas akum, therefore, was kaveya why shuls in traditional locations do not look like churches when it comes to outside and internal architecture. That's why the bima is bedafka be'emsa, and not in front of the shul, because in front of the shul, which is what the reformists wanted to do in Germany, they wanted to put the stage in front of the shul, like in a church lahavdil. The stage with the galach is and all the stuff is in the front of the church. The bima be'emsa is to show we're not building our shuls like the churches. Mixed pews for many poskim was an example of the way the goyim sit together in church. For a Jew to sit next to a woman in shul, besides bimadama to the Beis HaMikdash, the poskim said that's a chukas akum phenomenon. Introducing music with instruments, organs, in a shul was looked upon as chukas akum because the church is basically did this. And what I'm pointing out to you is a lot of chukas akum later on had other ramifications. There were chumras in some cases, kulas in other places, and we can spend the whole night upon this, but at the end of the day, even a simple question, and we'll end with this, of decorating a synagogue with flowers and on Shavuos became a major machlokas between Poskim, between the Vilna Gaon and his group, and the non-Vilna Gaon group. And in the Vilna Gaon's group, they didn't allow any flowers or trees or any type of greenery in the synagogue because they looked upon this as we're copying Christmas in our synagogues and our homes. With what's doing in our neighborhood, if you look in our neighborhood, it's interesting. Most shuls and most Hasidic shtiblach have flowers, beautiful flowers and bouquets and stuff in it, which meant to say our community never accepted the Chumrah of the Gaon. We accepted the shitas of Rov, other Acharonim, who held that we're not deriving it. Why are we doing it? Why do we do it on Shavuos? We're not doing it because of them. But because of Har Sinai, Hashem made what was a desert into a beautiful oasis. So we're trying to show the beautiful greenery of Har Sinai in the Beis HaKnesses. So Lomenayu Gangaminim. It's ours. It's our source.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.